अस्मिन् वारियासि प्रश्ना साधुवादो अमृतसिंह। Was an auspicious day, Vaishakha Purnima, in which many very auspicious events took place. It was the appearance day of Sri Madhavendra Puri. We briefly discussed his wonderful pastimes last Sunday. Also, it was the appearance day of the ninth avatar of Vishnu, Lord Buddha, who appeared in the province of Bihar, Lumbini. Last night we briefly discussed the life and teachings of Lord Buddha. It was also the appearance day of one of the greatest devotees, one of the most munificent preachers of the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Srinivasacharya. We will be discussing, perhaps this Sunday, and also something very wonderful took place. It's the appearance day of Sri Radharaman, which is one of the greatest, most celebrated festivals in all of Vrindavan. The temple of Radharaman amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas is considered one of the seven principal temples of Brajbhumi. And of all the deities of the seven principal temples of Vrindavan, at the time of Aurangzeb, the great Muslim conqueror, all of the deities were removed to places like Jaipur or Karoli. Radha Govinda went to Jaipur. Radha Madan Mohan initially went to Jaipur. Radha Vinod went to Jaipur. Radha Shyam Sundar went to Jaipur. Radha Madhav went to Jaipur, Radha Damodar went to Jaipur, because there were great kings who were Vaishnavas. And the Mughal conquerors such as Aurangzeb, they could not penetrate the powerful fort of the Jaipur kings. But it is explained that Radharaman, he appeared in a very small size, hardly 12 inches. Therefore, he was easily able to be hidden, and therefore he never left Vrindavan. And because of that, of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, it is considered perhaps the most important temple in Vrindavan today, because the original Murti is still present there. And the worship is of the highest standard of any temple in Brajbhumi. So I'd like to explain how Radharaman appeared. It's a wonderful story. It is a story of Krishna's love for his devotees. And anyone who hears with a submissive and a sincere heart this wonderful narration is sure to attain pure love of God very soon. Because, as it says in the Bhagavatam, Srinvatam Sukata Krishna Punja Sravana Kirtana Hridyantastohya Bhadrani Vidunoti Suritsatam, that anyone who takes great pleasure in hearing the glories of the Lord and the glories of the Lord's loving relationships with his devotees, the Lord from within the heart purifies all contaminations and grants one the awakening of one's original prema, or love of Krishna. So when Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India. At that time, he came to the largest temple in all of India. It is the Ranganath Temple in a place called Sri Rangam. To get to the temple, you have to go through 7 sections, each with beautiful, beautiful gopurams or gates. Even to this day, it is one of the most magnificent architectural achievements ever created by man. Originally, this temple, it's a long story, but there was a great acharya who built it by using dacoits. I will tell that story some other day. But how to use everyone in Krishna's service? The most magnificent temple in all the world was built by dacoits in the service of Krishna. Later on, Jamunacharya made his base there. After him, his beloved disciple Ramanujacharya made it his headquarters. And from that time to the very day of today, the Sri Vaishnavas are carrying on this worship. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to the Ranganath Temple, upon seeing the beauty of this deity also has a wonderful story, which we will explain on some other day. It is the deity of Mahavishnu laying down, and it was worshipped by Vibhishan in Sri Lanka, and it was later taken to Ayodhya, and it was worshipped by Ram and Lakshman and Sita. And later, Vibhishan asked, when he was told to go back to Sri Lanka to rule, he wanted to be with Ram, but Ram ordered him, "No, you must go back and do your duty. Ravana is dead, now you must be the king." So Ram gave him this murti to take with him. But on the way, the murti wanted to stay there. So he stopped in Sri Rangam, which is a very holy place. And the murti said that, "I will stay here. You go to Sri Rangam, but I will face the direction of Sri Rangam, and I will always be overseeing your kingdom." So to this day, Ranganath is overseeing the affairs of Sri Lanka. Of course, it doesn't appear that things are so pleasing to him these days. But anyways, Lord Chaitanya was dancing before the beautiful deity of Sri Rangaraj. And there was a great devotee of the name Venkata Bhatt who happened to be in the temple. And when he saw the ecstatic love of Lord Gaurasundara, and he saw how he was dancing and how he was singing before the Lord, he was thinking, "This is truly a Mahabhagavat. This sannyasi must be some sort of avatar. Such beauty and ecstatic symptoms cannot be manifest in an ordinary human being." So with great affection, he fell at the feet of Lord Gaurasundara and begged him, "Please, you kindly come to my home and you bless it." It is just about the time of the Chaturmasya, the 4 months of the rainy season. "I beg you, you kindly spend these 4 months in my home." So Mahaprabhu agreed. And he went to the home of Venkata Bhatta. And there Venkata Bhatta greeted him with great affection. And he washed his lotus feet with his own hands with scented waters. And then he took that water and he drank, sprinkled it on his head and the heads of all his family members, and then he gave it to all of his family members to drink. Venkata Bhatta had 2 younger brothers. One's name was Trimala Bhatta, and the other was a sannyasi of the name Prabodhananda Saraswati. And he had a son whose name was Gopal Bhatta. And when Gopal Bhatta tasted the water that had washed the lotus feet of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his heart just erupted with ecstatic love of God. He began to weep tears of transcendental joy, and his limbs began to tremble, and with a choked up voice he began to chant the holy names of the Lord. At that time, he developed a spontaneous desire to simply serve the Lord with his life and soul. In fact, the whole family joyfully, joyously served the Lord with such affection. And Venkata Bhatta assigned Gopal Bhatt to be with Lord Sri Chaitanya at all times as his personal servant. He would massage him, he would wash his clothes for him, he would wash his utensils for him. He would do all the most menial loving services for the Lord. In this way, Sri Gaurasundara, seeing the humility, the gentle, and the devoted qualities of Gopal Bhatta, he became very, very dear to him. And everyone in Sri Rangam, they were so amazed to see the good fortune of this young child, Gopal Bhatta, who at such a young age, just by contact with the Lord, had become a great scholar of the Vedic literatures. As the days were passing, Venkata Bhatt, Trimala Bhatt, and Prabodhananda Saraswati, along with Gopal Bhatta, they were feeling that the days are coming closer when Lord Gaurasundara will leave us. And they were feeling too much sorrow in their hearts at the imminent thought of separation. Meanwhile, Gopal Bhatta, it is explained that he very much was thinking how unfortunate he was. Because Lord Sri Chaitanya, he could understand, was Krishna himself. And the first 24 years of his lila, he spent as the supreme enjoyer, along with the goddess of fortune for many years, Lakshmi Priya, Vishnu Priya. He was thinking, why am I so unfortunate that I was born in this faraway place where I could not see the beautiful form of Lord Gauranga as the enjoyer, as Brijendana Nandana Kumar with his beautiful, long, cascading, blackish hair. But I am forced to see him in this role of a sannyasi, of an ascetic, performing severe tapasya in order to reach out compassionately to the fallen souls of this world. He would lament and he would cry day and night, seeing Lord Chaitanya enduring the austerities of a sannyasi simply for our sake. One day, when he was resting, he had a wonderful dream. In this dream, he appeared in Sri Navadvip Dham. And there he saw Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in all his beauty and all his glory as a supreme enjoyer. He was dancing through the streets of Navadvip. At that time, Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya, they called Gopal Bhatta over to him and they embraced him. And they began to tell him something very confidential. But just before they spoke, he woke up. At that time, he immediately went right to the room where Lord Chaitanya was sitting. And Lord Chaitanya, seeing Gopal Bhatta falling humbly at his lotus feet, right before Gopal Bhatta Goswami's eyes, he manifested his divine form of Shyam Sundara. standing with his threefold bending form, peacock feather decorating his hair, beautiful lotus eyes glancing mercifully upon Gopal Bhatta, he was playing his flute. Complexion, deep, rich, blue, like a monsoon rain cloud. His lips reddened like the bimba fruit. Every limb of his body, so absolutely perfect in its beauty that it would conquer the entire universe through its beauty. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was just a child at the time, he fell at the feet of this beautiful form of Lord Sri Krishna. And then he rose. And when he rose, the fulfillment of his heart's desire came to be. That beautiful form of Krishna transformed into Navadvip Chandra. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, before he had taken the vows of renunciation, who with his beautiful hair was dancing and chanting in ecstatic love. Upon seeing this, Gopal Bhatta Goswami again fell at the lotus feet of the Lord, and when he got up, the Lord was sitting in his form as the sannyasi, who was traveling through South India. And he blessed Gopal Bhatta with the purest, highest states of ecstatic love. And he told him that you have pleased me very much by your humble service. You should serve your parents. They are great, great devotees of the Lord, and they are becoming very old. Service to such Vaishnavas is the perfection of life. And after your parents depart from this world, you should go to Vrindavan. And there you should join with Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And you should become their friend and their brother. And you serve me there. Shortly after this, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left to continue his travels. Some years later, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was being personally trained by Prabodhananda Saraswati, was one of the greatest, greatest scholars of the Bhakti Shastras. By the influence of Lord Chaitanya, all of them became pure devotees of Radha and Krishna. And Gopal Bhatta was always immersed in learning and serving his uncles and his father. And then his father and mother, in their old age, they called Gopal Bhatta and they said, please, we give you our blessings and our instruction that you always chant the holy name of Krishna. You always remember the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And now you should go to Vrindavan. Then they both chanted the names of Mahaprabhu and permanently left this world to go back to the spiritual world. Gopal Bhatta then went to Vrindavan. And when he arrived in Vrindavan, Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, the two most confidential associates of Lord Chaitanya, were so happy to receive him because they had heard about him. His glories had spread everywhere. And they sent a message to Lord Chaitanya that Gopal Bhatta had arrived. And overjoyed, he sent a letter back that you please accept Gopal Bhatta like your own brother. You live together and engage him in the service of Lord Govindadev. And he also sent a gift to Gopal Bhatta Goswami, the gift of a kopan and the very seat that Lord Chaitanya would sit on, a wooden seat. And those two gifts to this very day are within the Radharaman temple. Anyways, Gopal Bhatta was engaged in the service of Rupa Goswami's murti, Radha Govinda. And then Lord Chaitanya gave him an instruction in a vision that he should worship Lord Hari in the form of Shalagram Shila. So without hesitation, with his bare feet, he walked from Vrindavan all the way to the river Gandaki, That car can be moved? For those of you who know, the Gandaki River is high, high in the Himalayas, in what is now called Nepal, near the great pilgrimage site of Muktinath. There he obtained 12 Shalagram Shilas, and he brought them back to Vrindavan. But out of his natural humility, he was thinking that this worship of Shalagram Shila is a very advanced form of worship, and one must be very careful not to commit any offenses. And I am so offensive. I am so lowly and fallen. I have no right to do such worship. This is the natural humility of a devotee. One who thinks oneself advanced in spiritual life. Such a person, Krishna does not recognize. But one who, in a humble state of mind, worships the Lord with the blessings of the great souls, giving all credit to their mercy. Such a person, feeling very humble and low, is most dear and most precious to the heart of the Lord. So Gopal Bhatt went all the way back to Nepal, to the river Gandaki, to put the Shalagram Shilas back. And with appropriate mantras, he chanted, and he placed them back in the river. But each time he placed them back, they came back into his hands. We know from the Shastra that the Shalagram Shila is the very incarnations of the Lord himself. They are murti forms that are self-manifested. So several times he tried to put them back, but in each time they came back into his hands. So he decided that it appears that Shalagram wants me to take them back to Vrindavan. So he took them back. And those 12 Shalagrams, because he was living under a different tree every night, he had no fixed residence, he would carry them in a cloth bag around his neck. And he was never separated from them. And he would worship them with great emotion of pure love. One day, a very wealthy devotee came to Vrindavan and decided to give gifts to the Srimurtis. So he gave some beautiful cloth and jewelry and crowns to Gopal Bhatta. And Gopal Bhatta was thinking that the Shalagrams are very small and they have no real form like Krishna, although Krishna is residing within that. The other Goswamis, how wonderfully they are worshipping the Lord with all nice paraphernalia. I would also love to offer these nice gifts to you, my Lord, if only you could appear in such a form to receive them. And one night he placed all those gifts on the altar, small altar he made, and there he placed the 12 Shalagrams and he took rest. And the next morning, he woke up, and then he went to the Jamuna to take his bath and gather some Jamuna water to bathe his deities. And when he returned to his great wonder, he saw that one of those Shalagram Shilas of the name Damodar had grown and expanded and manifested into the beautiful form of the deity of Krishna. This deity was so beautiful, standing in the Tribhanga, threefold bending form, playing upon his flute, beautiful lotus-like eyes, and all extraordinary qualities he possessed. When Gopal Bhatta saw this, he was overwhelmed with joy, and he called the other Goswamis, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, Bhugarabha Goswami, they all came running. And when they saw this beautiful form of Sri Radharaman, They were all just amazed at Krishna's love and his mercy toward his devotee. And it was on that day of Vaishakha Purnima that they gave the murti the name Radharaman, because he took place just in the area where the Ras Lila takes place. Radharaman means Krishna who gives pleasure to Sri Radha. And it was a beautiful installation. And so many Brijvasis, all the Goswamis came to celebrate this wonderful event. Gopal Bhatta Goswami saw in Radharaman an extraordinary feature. He saw that his feet were identical to the feet of Madan Mohan, that his chest was identical to Sri Gopinath, and that his face was identical to Govinda Dev. The three most important murtis in Vrindavan all appeared in one form as Sri Radharamanji, and he worshipped with all his heart. Gopal Bhatta Goswami would carefully bathe Radharamanji with the Jamuna water. He would carefully offer flowers and decorations. Very soon people came forward and built a nice temple for him. But one day, when he was sitting before Radharaman, he began to remember the services he offered Lord Gaurasundar and Sri Rangam. How personal and intimate it was when he was Lord Chaitanya's own personal servant. And he began to cry in ecstatic love, feeling such intense separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he began to think how it was his father's last wish that he dedicate his entire life to worshipping Sri Chaitanya. As he was weeping in that thought, the Lord fulfilled his desire. And Radharaman, right before his very eyes, transformed into the beautiful form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after giving his divine blessings and assuring Gopal Bhatta Goswami that any worship that you offer to Radharaman is directly accepted by Lord Chaitanya, because we are exact, identical and one and the same in every respect. Then he transformed into Radharaman again. And it is explained that the nature of the love between Radharamanji and Gopal Bhatta Goswami is anything at any time that Gopal Bhatta desired, Radharaman would immediately fulfill that desire. It is true that when we have pure desire, when we desire only pure devotional service, then Krishna, who is the master, who is the supreme lord of all that exists, he becomes bound by the love of that devotee. He becomes the service of his, the servant of his bhakti. You must know that the nature of love is never to take, but to give. When we have an aspiration to take something, our love is not pure. But when our aspiration is simply to give our lives for our beloved, that is love. When Prahlad Maharaj was asked by Lord Narsingadev, please ask any benediction. Prahlad said, if I ask anything of you for myself, You are not meant for my pleasure. That is love. But Prahlad was so deeply realized that he understood the heart of Lord Narasimhadev. He knew what it was that he could give the Lord that would give him the greatest satisfaction. And therefore he asked, "Liberate my father and let me stay in this material world as long as any fools and rascals are trying to enjoy material life, and let me try to help them to surrender at your lotus feet." The pure devotees, the only thing they request of Krishna is, "How can I serve you? How could I please you? What could I do for you?" And Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Shikshastakam prayers, he manifested to the highest degree this sentiment of pure devotional service. Ashlisya vapadaratam panashtumam adarshana maramahatam karotuva yatatata tavidatatulam pato mat prananatatis evanaparaha. My Lord, if you like, you can embrace me, if that's what makes you happy. If you like, you can trample on me. Or if you like, you can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You have every right to deal with me in any way you please, because I am your servant unconditionally. Nadhanam nadjananda sundarim kavitam bhajagadisha kamaye mama janamani janamanishwari bhavata bhakti rahoi tikipvai. My Lord, I am approaching you, but I do not want any amount of wealth. We find people in this world, they may be fabulously wealthy with all sorts of facilities for comforts and enjoyment, but we see that their hearts are lonely. They are suffering. There's no meaning or fulfillment in their lives. Lord Chaitanya, he says, "I don't want any amount of wealth from you." He wrote these Shikshastakam verses at the final stages of his life when he was a sannyasi, living in a simple little room called the Gambira in Jagannath Puri. The king of Orissa, Maharaj Prataparudra, was willing to give Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the whole kingdom or anything within it. But Lord Chaitanya was content. "Use it all for the service of Jagannath. For me, I'll sleep on the floor in my little room." He said, "I do not want wealth. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. I do not want beautiful women." The fact is, he was married to the most beautiful woman in all the creation, Vishnu Priya, who is none other than the goddess of fortune herself. But in the role of a devotee, for the sake of service, by delivering the message of Krishna consciousness, Sanatana Dharma, to the souls of this world, he was willing to leave her out of his love for us. He said, "I do not want wealth. I do not want beautiful women. I do not want fame and followers. I do not even want liberation from suffering and pain. I only want your service. I only want to be your servant, to do what you want me to do at all times. And if you want me to take birth in this world again and again and again, let me serve you in this way." This is the spirit of pure bhakti. And Krishna, who knows the natural love of his devotee, it is a fact, he is always fulfilling the heart's desire. Now sometime we may become frustrated. We may want something, or we may be put into hardship and tribulation, and we may say, Why is the Lord doing this to me? If you are not a devotee surrendered to the Lord, you are simply receiving your past karma. The Lord is not directly involved in the life of those who are not his devotees. He simply allows them to just obtain whatever they have earned for themselves through their past activities. There will be some happiness, there will be some distress. You have hurt others, you will be hurt. You have done good to others, good will be done to you. The automatic laws of karma are upon such people. But for one who says, Krishna, I'm yours. In fact, Guru Maharaj used to say, if one time with a sincere heart you say, Krishna, I'm yours, be prepared, Krishna takes over. And then he gives you what you need. If you want to be a pure devotee, you should know that your external, superficial, materialistic desires may not be fulfilled. Because if they are, you'll never become a pure devotee. But your innermost soul's desire, Krishna's fulfilling. Through success and failure, through honor and dishonor, through health and disease, through pleasure and pain, Krishna is simply calling us back home, back to Godhead. He is simply making wonderful arrangements to fulfill the innermost desire of our heart, to become his pure soul devotee, to be his lover. The sweetness of his love is the longing of every soul. To taste one drop of that love is to merge into an unlimited ocean of joy. Srila Rupa Goswami has said that all the pleasures of this world and even of the higher planets, the heavens, they are all tinged with inevitable suffering. Therefore, they do not even compare to the great, great bliss of mukti or liberation. But then Goswamiji explains that compared to the ocean of pleasure which one experiences when one has unalloyed love of Krishna, prema bhakti, the amount of pleasure derived from mukti is less than a single drop. And this ocean is dormant within every person's heart. And it is Krishna's great longing to make that ocean of love available to everyone. And it is for this reason that the Lord descends and incarnates in this world again and again and again. Sometimes he appears in his original form of Krishna. Sometimes as Lord Ram. Sometimes as Lord Narasingadev, Vamanadev, Kuramarup, Varahadev. He appeared in this age of Kali Yuga as Lord Sri Gauranga. Sometimes he appears by empowering his devotees to deliver the same mercy, the same grace, to show us the way of real happiness, of real love. And one who attains that love, Krishna becomes the selfless servant of that devotee. And it's a great mystery how Krishna serves his devotees. In the spiritual world, the love between Krishna's devotees is a love which is simply the lila of play. But in this material world, the only reason why the devotees are here is to serve the Lord by helping to bring others back to the spiritual world. So what is the fulfillment of their desire? Sometimes devotees of the Lord puts them through great pain, suffering, and even death, because he knows by doing so, he will actually serve that devotee's mission. It's like the largest religion in the world now is Christianity. It has almost twice as many followers as anyone else. Of course, like most religions in Kali Yuga, most people who are followers do not follow. But nevertheless, so many people has heard his message. And the fact is, Jesus is a Shaktivesh avatar, according to the great acharyas of India. He's a Shaktivesh. He's a pure devotee empowered by Krishna to perform a particular mission in this earth. And while he was alive, he only had a small following. But then he was tortured, he was beaten, he was crucified. And he appeared to be dead. And it was because he was crucified that Christianity spread throughout the world. Every Christian wears the cross. Every church has a cross on it. What does that mean? They celebrate him because he died for others, because he suffered for others. So yes, he suffered, but Krishna put him in that suffering condition just to fulfill his desires. Because Krishna knew his only business was to help others become God conscious. And if in his suffering to help others become God conscious, people become God conscious, that's his business. The Lord fulfilled his desire by putting him through such a thing. In the life of our own spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, you know the story. He had no money. He had nothing. He was a beggar. He was a great scholar and a pure devotee. He was living in Vrindavan happily. But his Gurudev wanted him to spread Krishna consciousness in the Western world, in the English language. That was his only desire. He had no other ambition in his life but to do that. So Krishna put him on a cargo ship. It was here in Bombay, a few minutes away in Juhu. He approached Sumati Murarji. Actually, Sumati Murarji first met Prabhupada at Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra is the place Bhagavad Gita was spoken. She went there for a festival, and she saw one lonely sannyasi, older man, just sitting under a tree, chanting japa. And she went up to him and offered her obeisances, and introduced herself. And he said, "Oh, you are Sumati Murarji of Skindia Steamships?" He said, "Yes." He said, I would like you to give me passage to America." She said, "You don't want to go to America. You're too old." And then he came to Bombay. And he asked her again. Here is the Jagat Guru, Acharya. And he's so humble, he's asking this old Mataji, "Please, huh?" Very pious woman. She's also a very good devotee of Srinathji. And he knew she was a pious devotee of Krishna. And he wanted her to utilize her devotion to Krishna to help spread the glories of Mahaprabhu throughout the world. And she loved this old man. She thought, what a great saint he is. He would speak here in Bombay from the Bhagavatam and the Gita, and she and many others would come to hear him. But he had nothing. What, who do you know in America? What will you do? It's cold. You will die. But he sat on the steps of her office. I will not move until you give me a ticket to America. Huh? Not for himself. How many Indians want to go to America? You go to the American consulate in Bombay any day of the week. There's line going blocks, right? They've told me like this. So many want to go, and they're so strict who they'll give their visas to. If they were lenient, half of Bombay would be standing in line. But why do they go to America? Nobody wants to go to America to give. They all want to go to America to take. They want money. They want luxuries. They want nice televisions and nice operating telephones and nice cars with roads where there's not all kinds of traffic and crazy people. And they want, they want sense gratification, that's all. Why else would an Indian want to go to America? They want sense gratification. Prabhupada didn't want sense gratification. He knew that the people of America were the most terribly suffering people in the world because they were bereft of God consciousness, of true understanding of Sanatana Dharma. He wanted to give the wealth of India to them. Most Indians, when they go to America, they want to get the money of America and send it to their relatives in India. They want to send the material wealth of the West to India. Prabhupada was unique. He was one out of millions. He wanted to go there to bring the wealth of India to the spiritually starving masses of America. Have you ever heard of such a thing? This was his devotion. He was not going there to get a job. He was not going there to make money. He was there to give the pure life of Gita. And on this cargo ship, it took a month to reach. And during that month, Krishna sent terrible storms and huge waves. It appeared the time that the ship was going to sink. And because of the great commotion of the waves and the rains and the storms, Guru Maharaj was terribly seasick and he had two heart attacks. And if he had a third, he was certain to die. And then he arrived. He went to Butler, Pennsylvania for a month. Then he came to New York City. He was living in the ghettos. Whatever little he had, people stole from him. He had one typewriter. He was doing his writing. It was stolen. He met one young boy who offered to let him stay with him. The boy was one day intoxicated on LSD, came with a weapon to kill him. He accused our Guru Maharaj that he had stolen a bar of soap. He didn't even use this kind of soap. Anyways, he was being this is the way he was being misused. Why would Krishna do this to him if Krishna fulfills the desires of his pure devotees? Because if he didn't go through all this, to this day we would not really appreciate what he did for us. It is a fact. If someone just came to Prabhupada and said, here's a round trip first class ticket on British Airways Concorde jet. And when you arrive in America, there will be thousands of disciples waiting for you, and they'll put you in a nice, beautiful, palatial temple where you can sleep and you'll have all kinds of servants. If he arrived like that, Krishna could have done that for him. We would not have appreciated how much he loves us and how much he loves humanity to make sacrifices. Therefore, Krishna tortured him. and put him through terrible pains, sufferings, and hardships. Externally. But internally it was all to fulfill his innermost desire, to spread the word of Krishna. Because when people saw how simple and how much he was willing to give his life for others, they appreciated him. And to this day, over 25 years later, we are still appreciating the sacrifice. And people for thousands of years to come will appreciate that sacrifice. So we must have faith that each devotee has two natures that are side by side conflicting with one another. We have our spiritual nature, which wants really, sincerely, to become a pure devotee of God. But we have our conditioned, material nature, which still wants material security and material pleasure. We still want to feed our own egoistic pride. We still want nice, comfortable life for our body and senses. And on the other hand, we have a nature that simply wants to be an unalloyed instrument, a pure servant of Krishna. On one hand, we're longing to fulfill lusty desires, the lower self, and then the higher self is saying, no, please, Krishna, save me from all this. On one hand, we want to be humble and gentle. And on the other hand, when somebody offends us, we become raging, angry, violent, and blasphemous. We have a lower self and a higher self. Krishna is the humble servant of our higher self. We should know that whatever Krishna puts us through, if we sincerely want to be his devotee, it is his. When Krishna takes the position of humble servant, he is the most humble servant. He is the supremest humble servant of his devotee. Just like a mother or father, they will do what's good for the child. But sometimes, due to ignorance and foolishness, the child does not understand. And the same way, Krishna will always do what's good for his sincere devotee. But sometimes our conditioned nature cannot understand it. Sometimes even it rebels against Krishna's mercy because it's not what we want. It's not what we expect. But Krishna consciousness is that wonderful path, that wonderful movement by which we can actually learn the perfection of life, how to reciprocate in love of God. With Krishna, who is seated within the heart of every living being. Krishna is in everyone's heart. And a devotee is aspiring to reciprocate with Krishna's love through every living being. Everywhere. This is the goal of the devotees of the Lord. And the appearance day of Radha Raman, which we are discussing today, is such a wonderful illustration of the reciprocation of pure love between the Lord and his devotee. And he reveals these wonderful, wonderful pastimes simply to attract our hearts back to that reciprocation of love. And the Lord has instructed us that this very lila of the spiritual world is available to everyone in this world through the process of Sankirtan. Because what is the Sankirtan movement? It is when we all come together to reciprocate love with one another in the name of Krishna. And by doing this, we offer the greatest love to Krishna. Mad bhakta puja vyadika. Krishna says, if you want to show your love for me, you must show your love to my devotee. Those who love my devotees are most dear to me. Those who try to love me directly are not so dear to me. Krishna appeared as Lord Chaitanya to teach the Sankirtan movement because it is actually such a direct and wonderful way of offering the highest service to Krishna. We exclusively, completely put our attention in coming together to inspire one another to glorify the name of God. Every member of the kirtan is part and parcel of the whole effort to glorify Krishna in this world. Each of us is a part. Together we are a whole. Each part is working in harmony with the whole for the glory of God and the upliftment of humanity. It's such a wonderful scientific process. When we sing in harmony with one another, we're making the whole, every part harmonious for the fulfillment of the desire of the whole. When we dance in harmony with one another, every part is harmonizing with the whole for the glory of God. And most of all, when our enthusiasm, when our desire is very much great to make wonderful performance of kirtan for the pleasure of God and for the upliftment of humanity, we can know that there is nothing more satisfying to the Lord than this joint loving effort amongst the devotees to spread the beautiful sound of his holy name throughout the world. Thank you very much.